high on the wall, and below it three exquisite paintings. A triptych, showing Mary and the infant Jesus, with angels either side. It soothed him to look at them, and this intrigued him, as he wasn't a Catholic. In fact, he wasn't religious at all. But something in the utter certainty of the belief he saw all around him resonated deep inside. The pictures, the stained glass windows, the ornate statues and soaring, vaulted ceiling embossed with gold and painted plaques were all evidence of lofty principles and unshakable faith. He sighed. He felt safe in here, as if the moment he dipped his finger into the holy water in the stoop, his mind was cleansed of all fear. The smell of incense filled the church, stilling his thoughts and slowing his pounding heart. It was sad to think that outside, beyond the heavy wooden door, lay chaos and lawlessness. He longed to carry this peace with him when he left, but he knew it wasn't possible. He could, however, right some wrongs. He could redress a few terrible mistakes that had been made in the name of so-called justice. After all, the guilty should never go unpunished. And if the system wasn't able to do the job, then it was up to those that were to show them the error of their ways. Irreligious as he was, he recalled a verse from Proverbs that had somehow lodged in the corner of his memory. Whoso diggeth a pit will fall into it, and whoever rolls a stone, it will come back on him. He appreciated the Old Testament doctrine of retribution. He too believed in an eye for an eye. Sometimes God, if indeed he existed, needed a little help. He closed his eyes and breathed in the silence. It was time to arrange for another pit to be dug. Professor Wilkinson is in London today. I'm Lisa Forbes. I was called out to look at your vagrant. She sounded young for a forensic pathologist, but Marie noticed that was happening a lot recently. Expert witnesses, CEOs of big organizations, professors and consultants were all starting to look like school leavers to her. Thank you so much. Can you give me a preliminary briefing over the phone, or shall I come in and see you? Marie hoped that the latter wouldn't be the case.
I can't tell you much yet, but it's not exactly an open and shut case, Sergeant Evans, if you'll pardon the pun. You were right to suspect foul play. That's what I really wanted you to know. And contrary to appearances, he is certainly not a rough sleeper.
Nice one, Max.
Any idea of time of death? Marie asked. Preliminary guess only, around 2 hours prior to your finding him. Rigor mortis had hardly set in, although it was detectable in the small muscles in the face and neck. Lividity had just started to appear, so, yes, a couple of hours, which would make it around 7 a.m, give or take.
Marie quite missed Rory's usual quirky reluctance to yield up the time of death, but on this occasion it did speed things up.
Thank you. That's much appreciated. Was the slash on his wrist the cause of death?
Lisa Forbes hesitated.
I need to do a full examination before I comment. I'll send my preliminary report through as soon as I've completed the autopsy.
And that was all she was going to get. No veiled suggestions of evil doings, no cryptic hints about medical enigmas. Yes, she certainly missed Rory Wilkinson's take on post-mortem news. Still, she now knew they were right to be suspicious, which meant they had a murder on their hands, and the timing wasn't perfect considering Jackman's personal investigation. With a grunt, she went off to find D.I. Pete Lawrence. With a bit of grovelling, there was a good chance that Pete would shoulder the rest of the fraud case, and that would make life considerably more manageable. Whatever happened, no way was she going to let Jackman down when he needed her. And apart from that, Sarah Jackman's death was occupying a lot of her waking thoughts, and a good few of her sleeping ones, too. For some reason, she had a really bad feeling about what had happened to Jackman's sister-in-law, and she was becoming as obsessed with it as Jackman himself. When Jackman arrived at Raynham Lodge, he saw his mother's car parked there, and a white Honda Jazz that he was pretty sure belonged to Ella Jarvis. He found them in the lounge, deciding on the strategy for the coming days.
"Rowan, come in, darling."
His mother greeted him with a tired smile and patted the sofa next to her.
"Ella's moving in first thing tomorrow. She's going to have the guest bedroom nearest to the boys' room."
Jackman went up to Ella with his hand outstretched.
"I can't tell you how grateful we all are for what you're doing."
Ella shook his hand and shrugged.
"It's no big deal, honestly. I want to help. Sarah would have done the same for me."
Ella was tall, with long pale blonde hair, and Jackman was pretty sure it wasn't dyed. She had blue-grey eyes and well-defined features. It made a change not to see her in a forensic protective suit and mask. He guessed that, like him, she was in her mid-30s. She exuded a sporty kind of strength.
"I was wondering," said Jackman, "if you would like to talk to our force psychologist about handling bereaved children, that is. She's really approachable, and I'm very aware that you are taking on a tough assignment here."
Ella smiled, but then sighed. "No need, sir. Sadly, I've been there before with my half-brother when he was young. I think the most important thing to remember is to be honest. Talk to them in simple language and make sure they really understand what you're saying."
Sounds like you know what you're doing."
He looked apologetically at her.
"I didn't mean to suggest you aren't competent. I just know this isn't going to be easy. And I'm not Sir anymore, Ella. Everyone calls me Jackman, except my mother."
"Okay."
She smiled at him, and he could see why the boys liked her so much. Her open face radiated honesty, and that was a very good thing in Jackman's book. His mother looked up at him.
"We're going over to the boys' school in a few minutes, Rowan. We have an appointment with the school counsellor. The boys miss their friends and are anxious to get back."
She tilted her head slightly.
"And James isn't up to it. But Ella has kindly offered to come along."
"Want me to come too?"
"No, we're just going to let them know exactly what's happened and how much we've told the boys. Then they are going to tell us how to prepare Ryan and Miles for the kind of comments they might encounter from their friends."
Ella nodded.
"They need to have a few stock responses ready. Other kids can be hurtful when they don't understand properly. Their form teachers have said they will have a quiet chat with their closest friends and classmates and stress the importance of being kind at a time like this."
"Looks like you two have everything in hand. I'll use the time while you're away to make a thorough search of the house, just in case there's something here that might explain things more clearly."
Ella's fleeting glance was full of curiosity, and he knew Marie had been right. She had a keen nose for things not being as they should.
"Can you give me a couple of moments, dear?"
his mother said to Ella.
"I have a phone call to make, and I need to check with my husband that James is okay. I won't be long."
She left the room.
"Do you understand any of this?"
Ella preempted Jackman's words.
"Absolutely not."
He threw up his hands.
"Nothing makes sense. What about you?"
"The last time I saw her, I knew something was wrong, but she refused to say what it was."
Ella nibbled on her bottom lip.
"I thought it might be a problem between her and James, but she laughed at the idea, and I could see she meant it. She said she was happier with James and her sons than she'd ever dreamed she could be."
Ella exhaled.
"She really did mean it, I know she did."
"And then she killed herself."
Ella looked at him.
"Was that really the case?"
"She was recorded on CCTV, I've seen the footage, Ella. She threw herself into the river. I couldn't quite believe what I was seeing, but there is no doubt at all that it was a deliberate action."
Jackman leaned forward.
"Will you help me, Ella? I have to find the truth. We cannot allow this to be passed off as some mental aberration." We need to know why Sarah died.
Ella pursed her lips.
Children see things. They notice things, even if they don't understand them. I'll be talking to them a lot over the coming weeks. I'll tell you if anything sets off alarm bells.
He nodded.
Thank you. And keep your eyes open, too. Apart from her work, she lived for Raynham Lodge and her family. Something might draw your attention, or someone might mention something, if you know what I mean.
I want to know what happened too, so of course I'll stay vigilant, and I'll contact you if anything worries me.
Jackman reached into his pocket and took out his personal card.
Day or night, Ella, okay?
Ready when you are.
Harriet Jackman stood in the doorway. Ella stood up.
Nice to see you again, Jackman. I just wish the circumstances were different.
Ring me if you need a hand with Miles and Ryan. I'm not sure that you'll get too much support from my brother, but just shout if you need a man's assistance with anything.
After the door closed behind them, Jackman looked around the big house and wondered where on earth to begin. It was on his mind that her smartphone hadn't been recovered. There was a strong possibility that it was somewhere on the bottom of the Thames, but the clothes she had been wearing had no deep pockets, so maybe the phone was somewhere around the house, like her bag and her laptop.
Right, he said aloud. Come on, Jackman. Use police search procedure and don't waste precious time.
He ran up the stairs and into James and Sarah's bedroom. He had his brother's permission to look for whatever he wanted, and what he wanted was to know why his brother was a widower, and his young nephews were facing a future without their mother.
Chapter 7
Marie yawned. It was time to go home, but she felt restless, as if she hadn't done enough to warrant shutting up shop for the night.
Something bothering you, Sarge?
Robbie called over to her.
Dead men dressed as vagrants for a start, she said. Why does nothing make sense these days?
Considering what happened with the boss's sister-in-law, I'll agree with you there.
I was just wondering if we might hear any more from forensics tonight. We need to identify our faux tramp.
While she was speaking, the phone rang and Marie snatched it up. She was surprised to hear Orak, the IT boss.
Marie, you can tell that gorgeous DI of yours that I've indeed worked miracles on that massacred laptop he so kindly sent me, but I don't think he's going to like the contents of her inbox.
Marie took a breath.
There's something incriminating on it.
Someone didn't like Sarah Jackman. Not one little bit.
Marie jumped up.
Thanks, Orak. I'm on my way down.
She put down the receiver.
You get off home, Robbie. I could be a while. I'll see you tomorrow.
Can't I come with you?
That woman fascinates me.
He grinned broadly.
Not tonight. She might not have eaten, and she has a voracious appetite. You'd be the perfect snack.
She eats detectives?
Regularly. She hurried out of the office calling back. And never go down there after dark. Orak was sitting in front of a bank of screens.
Come in, Marie. Have a seat.
She indicated an office chair close to hers.
This isn't very nice, I'm afraid. I'm just sorry that you have to pass it on to Jackman when he must be feeling pretty shitty already.
Marie sat down.
He'll be relieved, I think. He swears she would never have acted as she did without provocation.
I think he's right.
Marie looked into those strange metallic-looking eyes. She knew that Orak had been blinded in one eye in an attempt on her life, and she wore the contact lenses to hide the damage.
I've printed off all the stuff from this person, and I've also looked through a whole load of deleted files and found a few drafts that might be connected in some way.
I don't suppose there's a contact name or address on these emails.
Marie didn't hold out too much hope on that one, but had to ask.
No, he moved around. I might be able to trace it, but there are some pretty sophisticated methods in use these days. Not that I'll give up on it, you know me.
Marie smiled.
Oh, I do. If anyone can find the sender, it's the woman right beside me.
Aurak smiled. How has Jackman taken it all?
Marie sighed. It's the children. That's what hurts him the most.
Oh, it's always the children, Aurak said softly.
Marie had never heard the person she privately thought of as a cyberwoman speak with so much feeling.
Aurak gazed into her screen. One night, my sister was stolen from her bed. She was 3 years old and we never saw her again. It devastated the village where my family lived. Nothing was ever the same, not for us, nor anyone else. Men looked with suspicion at men they had lived and worked with since they were bairns. Brothers suspected brothers, and we never had an answer. A blight entered our home that night and destroyed everything good for miles around.
Marie was silent, so shocked she could find nothing to say. For a fleeting moment she wondered why this intensely private woman chose to open up to her. What was it about her that brought forth these deeply personal revelations? She shivered.
Sorry, I don't know why I told you all that. Ancient history now. But it still hurts, as you can tell.
I'm so sorry. I'm not sure how you live through something like that.
That's what we humans do. Survive. Like you when you lost your bill. We find ways of dealing with things. Well, most of us do. But some don't. Like Sarah Jackman.
She passed Marie a sheaf of printouts. Something happened in Sarah's past. Something terrible. And whatever it was, this anonymous person wanted Sarah to account for it in some way. Read them. See what you make of it. But I'm pretty sure this man, and I'm certain it is a man, wanted retribution for something.
Marie stared at the paperwork thoughtfully.
So we need to find out all we can about Sarah's past. The thing is it something she told her husband about, or did she keep it to herself?
I go with the latter. Our self-styled judge and executioner seems to have been forcing her to revisit a very dark time in her life.
Aurak sat back.
Or he could be a messed-up screwball, and all these accusations are a complete fabrication, and sweet Sarah could neither understand nor cope with them.
Marie glanced down at the messages. Some seemed to be almost biblical in their wording. Others were just accusations. All of them seemed to be demanding justice.
But for what?
Good luck, and I'll try to track your sender.
Aurak looked at her. I don't like people who threaten others. Do you?
Especially not one who has the power to make a woman abandon her children.
Marie set her jaw. She was glad that she had something definite to give Jackman, something that would confirm his theories, but she was afraid too. Exactly what was lurking out there? Just what had crept back from the murky depths of Sarah's secret past?
Marie arrived back at the empty CID room to find a note on her desk. Ring pathologist before you leave. She has something for you, Rob.
Marie picked up the phone and was surprised to hear Rory's voice.
Ah, the very woman. My dear Marie, how are you? Personally, as I know you were about to ask, I'm recovering from a ghastly day in the capital. All that traffic and the noise. Give me my lovely homely mortuary here in the damp and dreary Fens any day. So much better.
Marie smiled to herself. This was more like it. He'd only been away a day, but she had missed him.
Sorry to hear that, Rory, but I'd expect nothing less from you. Now, I was asked to ring Lisa Forbes.
The lovely Lisa.
Actually, the dear girl hung on to get my opinion on the deceased gentleman that you so kindly provided her with earlier. And he was a gentleman, by the way. Well, up until recently, that is. He's new to the streets, that's for sure.
Max guessed that from his trendy haircut. Robbie looked at his manicured hands and corroborated it.
Astute young men are Max and Robbie. But listen, it's not his history that interested Lisa. It's the deep laceration at his wrist. I've looked at it with her and we both agree. You will find the dead man's prints on that Stanley knife. He killed himself. But I thought...
Patience, woman, Rory hasn't finished his tale.
He paused for dramatic effect.
But the laceration is a strange one. There are several what we call hesitation wounds visible, small nicks and cuts inflicted prior to finding the courage to make the fatal incision. These, from close examination, were made by a shaking hand. Then we get to the main cut. It, too, was inflicted to begin with, rather hesitantly. Then there is the slightest change of direction of the bleed, and a deep killing wound is administered. We suggest that although a man began the deed, another, gloved hand, exerted extreme pressure over his and helped him on his way.
A deliberately assisted suicide?
Marie exhaled.
Forensics is so exciting, is it not?
Rory was almost purring.
The tiniest deviation from what you expect to find in a whole new scenario opens up before you.
Marie shook her head.
Doesn't it just?
Well, now the interesting bit is over, I should tell you the rather sadder news about my trip to London.
Sarah?
Poor girl. Drowning is a particularly unpleasant way to take your life. It takes almost 2 agonizing minutes to lose consciousness, after an automatic struggle for survival as the air supply is shut off.
Rory made a tutting noise.
Thing is, without a reliable eyewitness to the whole event, it is difficult to determine the manner of death. She drowned, no question. But did she fall into the water as a result of a slip, a trip, or a dizzy spell? Or did she actually jump?
CCTV shows she jumped.
Have you seen it yourself?
Marie frowned.
Jackman saw it.
Not the same thing. He is personally involved. You should look, too. Impartially.
She would, first thing tomorrow.
So what's next?
I've performed a complete toxicology analysis just to determine whether there were any drugs in her system that could account for her actions, but the tests will take a little time, I'm afraid. And to be honest, I saw nothing physical to indicate she had taken anything.
He sounded unnaturally somber.
I hate to say it, but in this case I think you may deduce more from the circumstances surrounding her death than from my lab reports.
Will you be ringing Jackman, Rory, or shall I tell him?
I'll phone him immediately, but I suggest you check on him later. I hope he didn't expect more of me, only drownings are such a complicated business.
Don't worry. He'll know that no one could have done more, and I'll check that CCTV and talk to you tomorrow, okay?
Nighty-night. Sleep well, if you can.
Marie wasn't too sure about that. But whatever, she'd probably sleep better than Jackman, after he'd received both Orak and Rory's news. She gathered up her things and was about to go, when she saw Annie, the cleaner, waving to her. Part of a private cleaning company, Annie had been working at the station for years and was on first-name terms with most of the officers.
Are you finished in here, Sarge? Only it's just Stefan and me tonight, and we need to get on.
Sure, I'm just off. There's only one duty officer on tonight, and he's had to go out.
She grinned at Annie.
Eric sick again.
Annie's face darkened.
That man. If I didn't have my lovely Stefan on my rotor, heaven knows what I'd do. He never takes a day off, not like bloody Eric.
Stefan waved at her from across the room.
Evening, Sarge. You okay?
She waved back, wondering vaguely what part of Eastern Europe Stefan came from. His accent was very slight. One day she'd ask him, but not tonight.
Got to go. I'll let you guys get on.
She rode home, deep in thought, stopping at the local chippy on her way to pick up a fish and chip supper. She was glad to shut the door on the day. She indulged in a glass of white wine with her meal, and after washing up, finally summoned the courage to ring Jackman. By the time Jackman spoke to Marie, he'd digested what Rory had told him. He'd expected nothing less of him. In fact, he wondered if he'd overstepped the mark by requesting that Rory carry out the post-mortem personally. But he had felt, he owed it to Sarah to provide the very best. For a few moments they discussed the pathologist's findings, and then he became aware that Marie had more news for him. "Okay, Evans, cough it up." He heard her draw in a deep breath. Then she told him of Orak's sinister discovery from Sarah's laptop.
"I knew it. She was being targeted by some psycho."
His brain reeled.
"Jackman, how much do you know about Sarah's past?"
Marie's words brought him back to Earth. He thought for a moment.
"Well, see, I..."
He stopped.
"Not much, Marie.
In fact, surprisingly little. To me, she had no past.
Sarah was a wife and mother, the center of her family. I know she and my brother met at some charity function and that both her parents had either died or gone abroad, I'm not sure which, but they were not at the wedding."
He sounded embarrassed.
"And I suppose that is more or less it."
"So you know more about me than you do about your own brother's wife?"
"Okay, detective, what are you getting at exactly?"
"I hate to say this, but you, or we, really need to make some serious inquiries into Sarah's past."
Jackman sat back in his chair. She was right, but it wouldn't be easy.
"My brother will be key to that, but he's at breaking point. I'm going to have to tread carefully. Although,"
he thought about Ella Jarvis,
"Ella knew her better than anyone as far as I can tell. I'll start with her."
"And your mother?"
"Maybe she knew more than me, but I get the feeling she saw Sarah much as I did, very much in the present."
Marie sounded tense. "Jackman, shall I bring these printouts to you tonight? I've looked through them and I really think you should see them. I sense that this man, if it is a man, had something over Sarah, something from way back in her past. The things he says refer to a particular incident. They are not random threats about trivial things."
Jackman was still at his brother's house. He glanced at the clock and saw it was just after 9:30, and he hadn't even stopped to eat.
"That's asking too much of you, Marie. Look, I'll drive into town, grab something to eat and call into you on my way back to Mother's house, if that's all right."
"Fine. I'll be here,"
Marie said.
He arrived an hour later, full of apologies but clearly excited about something.
Marie led the way through to the lounge and offered him a coffee.
"Please, I could do with a caffeine hit right now."
He flopped down onto her sofa and let out a long, loud sigh.
"What a day."
"But you found something?"
Marie called out from the kitchen.
"A phone, Marie. I found it. And she didn't try to trash it either."
He got up and walked into the kitchen.
"I think she wanted it found.
It was in a drawer in the hall table right by the front door, almost the last drawer I looked in. I only noticed it on my way out.
Talk about hiding something in plain sight."
"Have you checked the call log?"
"Full of stuff from an unknown caller.
In one day alone, he rang her 14 times. Whoever this wicked bastard is, he drove her to do what she did, just as certainly as if he'd shot her point blank."
Marie handed him a steaming mug of coffee. "And when you read the emails, you'll get an insight into his scary mindset. It's unnerving, to say the least."
"Poor Sarah. What she must have gone through."
He turned to go back into the lounge.
"Did you actually stop and get some food, Jackman?"
Marie asked. He looked at her blankly.
No. I must have forgotten.
"I can do you an omelette and oven chips. You have to eat, you know that."
"No, honestly. I'm sure my mother will have left me something. Thanks anyway."
Marie went and fetched the folder of printouts.
"I hope you didn't mind, but I took copies for myself. There are some interesting quotes. I thought I'd look them up. They might just give us a clue as to what kind of person we're looking for."
"A psychopath, I suggest."
Apart from the obvious. Marie sat down opposite him. I've got a small mystery of my own, too. She told him about the dead man on the disused footpath. For a while he said nothing. Then he looked at her anxiously. What are the odds of having two supposed suicides within 2 days, and both seemingly involving some kind of coercion? Pretty rare, I'd say. The same thought had occurred to me. But where's the connection? Not that I even know who the dead man is.
You have to make that a priority, Marie. There is a chance he is connected to Sarah, and at least that would mean we're only looking for one psycho, not two.
Whoopee, I do like a glass half full attitude.
Seriously, Marie, you know we don't believe in coincidences. Unless we're unlucky enough to find ourselves looking for two vindictive killers at one time, we need to look at a possible link.
I quite agree.
And don't worry. I'll be hitting this case like a runaway train in the morning.
And you, D.I. Jackman, should get some food into you and have some sleep. Then, tomorrow, you can work your socks off to discover everything you can about Sarah's past. Oh, what was her maiden name, by the way?
Jackman looked perplexed.
Do you know, I don't think I've ever heard it mentioned.
Marie stared at him.
You do know this is pretty unusual, don't you?
You are a policeman. Policemen notice things.
We listen to everything people say and we remember.
It sounds to me as if your sister-in-law didn't want anyone to know that she even had a past. No parents, no previous name, no chat about silly things that happened when she was young. It's like Sarah Jackman didn't exist before she married your brother.
Chapter 8.
When Jackman arrived back at the family home, he was surprised to see his mother sitting at the kitchen table waiting for him.
I kept you something, Rowan. I guessed that you'd missed dinner.
His mother went over to the stove and produced a large soup bowl from the warmer. She was wearing one of his father's dressing gowns over her silk pajamas. It was something she had often done when he was a child, and for a fleeting moment it made him feel almost nostalgic for family life.
You didn't have to wait up, Mum.
Jackman gratefully accepted a bowl of delicious-smelling chicken casserole and a thick wedge of fresh bread.
I can't rest, son. The whole situation is unbearable. I've been wondering why you asked about Sarah's recent state of mind, and now I'm imagining all sorts of things. Do you suspect foul play of some kind?
Jackman laid down his fork and looked at her worried face.
Yes, I do. And all the time I'm uncovering new facts that confirm it.
Oh dear. That's good news and bad at the same time.
If I can prove it, it will be a huge relief to James and the boys. It will count for a lot just to know that their mother didn't leave them voluntarily.
His mother looked shocked.
Who would do such a terrible thing?
I don't know. But I intend to find out.
He took a mouthful of food. He hadn't realized how hungry he was.
Mum, how much do you know about Sarah's past?
His mother took a long time to reply. Finally, she said,
Not much, Rowan. And that's because when James first told us he was going to marry her, he asked your father and I never to pry into her private life. Her life before she met him, that is.
Jackman screwed his face into a frown.
Why on earth ask that of her future in-laws?
He said that something traumatic had happened in her past, and talking about it dredged up old fears and worries.
She gave a little shrug.
So we agreed, of course. What else could we do? We liked her from the moment we met her. We decided that if James was happy, then that was all that mattered. It wasn't much to ask in the grand scheme of things.
Except that whatever happened, it finally came back from the past, and it killed her, thought Jackman darkly.
You never said anything like that to me.
His mother gave him a rueful smile.
He didn't have to, did he? You two were never as close as I'd have liked.
and you were both so involved with your careers that frankly you never spent much time together anyway.
That's harsh, Mum.
It hurt, but Jackman had to admit that she had a point.
I do love James, of course I do, he's my big brother. But we have grown up to be very different men.
You were always very different. Different babies, different toddlers, different boys, teens and young adults.
Harriet laughed softly.
Chalk and cheese.
He sighed. I want to help him now. But I'm going to have to ask him to share whatever he knows, and I'm not sure that will be easy.
I'm certain it won't. Although his mood has improved somewhat this evening, he's not so fraught. He's calmer, at least.
And he's prepared to return home?
Now that he knows Ella will be supporting him, yes. Even in the state he's in, he wants what is best for Ryan and Miles, and they want to go back to school.
She gave him a tired smile.
But don't worry. I'll keep a close eye on him. My friend Clara is covering for me at the stables this week, so I'll have more time.
You look as though you need someone to keep an eye on you. You're exhausted, Mum.
We'll get through it. We're a tough family, all things considered.
True. I'll be in and out of Renham Lodge, and I'll make sure Ella has everything she needs.
Bless you, Rowan. Now, if you finish that, go get some sleep. You can't function properly without food and rest.
You sound just like Marie. She's told me that once already tonight.
Sensible woman. Take heed. And now off to bed.
He did as he was told, but took the folder of emails with him. At around 1 a.m, he was still staring at them, and fervently wishing he had left them downstairs. He didn't know what had happened, but he did know that they were dealing with a very sick son of a bitch. Yvette called out softly.
Susie, are you awake?
Yes, I have been for hours.
Me too.
Yvette turned over to face Susie's side of the bedroom.
Worried about Mum coming home tomorrow?
Partly. I mean, I'm terrified that she might be taken ill again, but I'm more worried about the boys.
Yvette wondered why they still called them the boys, when by now their ages ranged from 30 to 45.
I wish Mother had never said all that about not resting until Brendan's name is cleared. It's fired up Dale and Liam all over again. I know, I feel the same. I just wanted Mum's last days to be peaceful and full of love, not riddled with tension.
I bet you can't wait to get back to your kids and your Stevie.
Susie sighed.
We all said we'd be here for Mum to get her over this bad patch. After all, she was always there for us through thick and thin.
She shifted and the bed creaked.
Stevie understands, and he's so good with the youngsters. He knows it's not forever. Still good of you, Susie. And it's good of Kenny's wife, too. I'm really pleased you're with me right now. I don't think I would have coped without you.
Don't be daft, of course you would.
Yvette wasn't so sure.
Dale and Liam scare me, Sue. They're so intense, so driven. And if I'm truly honest, I've lost heart. Brendan is never coming back, and we could do nothing to make it happen. So what is the point?
Don't let them hear you talk like that, Evie. They want us all to be together for this last hurrah.
The bloody crusade! I wish it was all over,
Yvette said.
You can't tell me that you aren't worried by the look in Dale's eyes.
Honestly, it terrifies me. And Liam's even worse. Hell, he was only 8 when it all happened. But I think he's the most obsessed. I have no idea what they will do next. But I'm here for Mum, so I'll stay. And say all the right words until this is finished.
She waited for a moment, and then added,
And you'd be well advised to do the same.
Yvette drew her knees up to her chest and pulled the duvet tighter around her. It was sound advice. She knew how her family felt about loyalty. But even so, she felt a growing apprehension that something dreadful was going to happen. Chapter 9. Jackman had driven to Raynham Lodge to see the boys off. It was their first day back at school, and he felt sick with anxiety about what they might be facing there. But then, kids could surprise you. Whatever, he felt that he should be there to add his support and let them know that their uncle was around for them. A smiling Ella loaded them into the car, checked that they had everything they needed, and waving through the open window, sailed off down the drive.
"One small step," he murmured to his hollow-eyed brother.
There was no answer. James seemed almost locked in, which wasn't what Jackman needed right now.
"Ella has left us croissants and coffee, so come on, brother. You need to eat."
Jackman took his arm and gently propelled him towards the door. In the kitchen, James sat at the table and stared blankly across the room. Jackman heated the croissants, poured the coffee and placed the two plates and mugs on the table.
"No arguments, James. Eat."
James reached for the marmalade and placed a small helping beside the pastry, then picked up the glass jar and stared at it.
"Sarah made a load of this for the local church, to sell at a Macmillan charity morning."
His voice was toneless, and Jackman wondered what on earth the doctor had prescribed.
"I know. Ryan sold me two jars, and I probably only eat one a year."
James didn't reply. He didn't touch his food.
"This can't be happening. What did I do that was so wrong?"
Jackman put his coffee cup down.
"You did nothing wrong, James. So don't go there. None of this is your fault." "Then why does it feel like it is? I feel like I'm paying for some terrible sin."
Jackman took a breath. "This could be the way in. James, there is something I need to tell you, and I'm going to need your help." He didn't wait for a reply.
"I believe that what happened to Sarah stemmed from an incident in her past. You have to tell me all you know about it. The thing she didn't talk about."
For the first time, Jackman saw a glimmer of interest in his brother's eyes. He sensed that he had thrown James a lifeline, one that meant he wasn't to blame after all.
"I would, but I don't know myself."
Jackman stared at him.
"What? You never asked?"
James picked a corner off his croissant and nibbled at it.
"Quite early in our relationship, Sarah told me that something had happened to her. She was involved in something that affected her so badly that she couldn't talk about it. She said that maybe one day she'd explain, but it might be that she'd never be able to do so. It was my choice as to whether or not we went forward or called it a day."
"And you chose to stick with her?"
"I loved her, Ro. I still do. It seemed a small thing to ask, and it wasn't the past that I was interested in. It was our future together."
"Weren't you curious?"
James sipped his coffee.
"A little, I guess. But I'd promised not to ask, and that was that. We moved on. Everything was perfect. Or so I thought."
"Sarah had a secret side to her, James. I believe someone decided to remind her of it, and it was all too much for her."
Jackman made another pot of coffee.
"But what on earth could she have been mixed up in? She was such a sweet girl, and the best wife and mother ever."
Jackman didn't want to guess. He'd seen cases that would shock the life out of his brother. He knew how devious and destructive people could be.
"Can you tell me anything at all about her? Or her family?"
James was reverently spreading Sarah's marmalade onto his croissant.
"Like what?"
"Her parents, siblings,
where she came from, anything really.
Jackman was already feeling frustrated at having to wring every bit of information from his brother.
It's all a bit of a grey area, really. I don't think she had any siblings, and her parents, well, I've never actually met them. You know yourself that they never even came to the wedding.
James sounded apologetic and slightly embarrassed.
I think they moved abroad somewhere, although I'm not certain. They could be dead for all I know.
A feeling of despondency crept over Jackman. How could he never have noticed that his own sister-in-law had no past? He tried to remember conversations they had had, but all he could recall was talk of the children and holidays, days out, and work, of course. She did talk about her job, but had he really listened? She had been some kind of area manager for a company that supplied art and craft materials for primary schools, hence her travels around the county. She cut her hours when she had the children and finished up job sharing with another woman who also wanted a shorter working week. He wondered if the woman was a friend as well as a work colleague.
She did talk to Ella a lot.
James suddenly seemed to wake up.
Especially when she was suffering from postnatal depression after Miles' birth. Ella was the only person she could tolerate around her, and I think she might have opened up to her more than she did me.
Then as soon as she's back from the school, I'll talk to her.
He poured his brother another coffee.
Are there any personal papers or photographs belonging to her anywhere?
James frowned.
No. Strangely, she never brought a single photo with her when we married and settled down here. And that was odd, now I think about it, because she was always taking pictures of the kids and me and the dog and the garden and days out. She has boxes full of pictures and a massive file on the computer, but they all relate to our time here at Raynham Lodge.
Jackman wondered what on earth had happened to make Sarah blank out her entire existence prior to meeting James.
Whatever happened had to be pretty serious, didn't it?
James nodded slowly and continued to tear small pieces from his croissant.
Look, I know this is the worst time for you, but I want you to try to think of anything that could help me find out what happened.
He looked intently at his brother.
If I'm right, someone coerced Sarah into killing herself. Do you understand that, James? And I have to find out who that person was.
James stopped chewing and stared back.
So it was nothing to do with us, with our life together.
Help me out here, bro. Forget the guilt. There's a very dangerous person out there, and I need your help, badly.
Okay. I'll do my best, I promise.
This is for Ryan and Miles as well, you know. They need to grow up knowing the truth about their mum, not what the papers and the media are going to make of it.
James nodded slowly.
You're right.
Think, James. Was there any subject she shied away from? Any topic of conversation that she avoided? Something she couldn't bear to watch on TV?
James's brow knotted in concentration. Then he said,
Funnily enough, there was only one time when she really looked scared, like wide-eyed fearful, and that was when I told her that my little brother, Rowan, was a policeman.
Jackman tilted his head to one side.
Why?
Oh, she covered it up. She said she was simply surprised, considering that both father and I are in finance. But I knew her shock was genuine. She was frightened at the thought. I know it.
So, whatever happened all those years ago probably involved the police.
Thank you, James.
That's something that I can follow up.
Jackman's mind started to race. She might be on their files or on the PNC, but as a victim or a perpetrator of a crime. Gary Pritchard and PC Kevin Stoner peered around the crowded tables of the drop-in centre. They were looking for one face in particular.
She comes here most weekdays for a hot drink and a sandwich.
K Kevin went up to the serving hatch and smiled at the volunteer standing behind it.
Ron, has Cassie been in today?
Ron, big, beefy and wearing a Leicester Tigers rugby shirt, shook his head.
Not yet, mate. She's been getting later and later. Reckon it's the arthritis catching up with her.
Or the meths, thought Gary. He knew Cassie of old. She had been on the streets for as long as he could remember. She was a sad case, but weren't they all? Recently, both he and Kevin had noticed a decline in the old lady. Once lippy, sarcastic and argumentative, she was now almost taciturn. Even so, if you wanted to know anything about street people, Cassie was the one to ask. Whether she told you or not was another matter, but she missed nothing, and she had taken a shine to the polite, good-looking PC Kev, as she called him.
Speak of angels, Gary pointed to the entrance.
Cassie, dressed in more layers of ragged clothing than he would have thought possible to get on, was fighting to get her battered trolley through the doorway. Kevin hurried over and helped her, only to receive a short tirade about her not being helpless yet, and if she wanted help, she'd ask for it. Kevin grinned at Gary, took a tenner from his wallet, and went back to the counter. He handed it to Ron.
Give her whatever she wants, plus the change.
I'm assuming you two want something, said Cassie,
looking at Gary.
And not being stupid, I'm guessing it's about the Riverside death.
Gary noted that she didn't say suicide or murder, just death.
We'd appreciate your help, Cassie, if you wouldn't mind.
Do I have any choice?
She muttered.
There's a free breakfast in it, and maybe a few quid for yourself.
She sat down heavily.
Okay, fire away.
Kevin leaned forward.
We need anything you can tell us about the man who died.
Food first.
Kevin jumped up and went to the counter.
Give her the works and plenty of tea.
He returned to the table.
Ron's bringing it over for you.
Cassie rearranged some of her layers of clothing and sat back, like some elderly dowager duchess giving court.
We've seen him around all week, but he wasn't used to the streets, you know. He was scared, very scared.
Surely, if you were new to this sort of life, it would be very frightening, asked Kevin.
Not like he was, me duck. We tried to talk to him, but he was having none of it. And we saw him with a man a couple of times, and he were a stranger too, and none of us liked the look of him. Very odd he was.
How do you mean, odd? Asked Gary. In what way?
Well-dressed, but kind of dark, like a funeral. In his 40s, I'd guess. Face like an undertaker. But it were his eyes that got you. Staring eyes, like he was on something. Only you knew he wasn't. And I could be wrong, but I'm sure he was the reason for the dead man to be so frightened.
Have you seen the other man since?
Nor sight nor sound. He's gone.
Gary glanced at Kevin and raised an eyebrow.
Would you recognize him again, Cassie?
I'll see him in my dreams, Duck.
She shivered.
Oh, yes. Once seen, never forgotten that one. And if I sees him again, I'll be straight down that cop shop of yours and you can lock him up.
Why would we want to lock him up? Said Kevin.
Because pound to a penny, he's responsible for that poor man dying.
At that point, Ron arrived with a plate of eggs, bacon, sausage, tomatoes and hash browns and a big mug of tea.
Courtesy of these two gentlemen, Cass. And here's the change for you.
I should think so too,
she grumbled. But Gary noticed a twinkle in her roomy eyes, and she didn't hesitate to dig in.
So, the man who died, he didn't speak to any of you?
Not one of us.
She showered her dinner in salt and pepper and lavish quantities of tomato ketchup.
Tell you something, though. The fear that came with him, it's still out there, in the alleyways and the town lanes, especially after dark. None of us slept well last night.
Death does leave a shadow sometimes.
Gary looked sharply at Kevin, surprised at the depth of feeling in the young man's words. Cassie stopped chewing and looked at him shrewdly.
Nicely said, PC, Kev. You're a bit of a philosopher on the quiet, aren't you?
Kevin shrugged. Privately, Gary agreed with Cassie. The young officer had been right. Death did leave a shadow over a place. Gary took a £5 note from his pocket and passed it to her.
If you see that man again, come and find us. And if you are worried about anything at all, we'll help if we can.
Outside, Gary looked at Kevin.
She saw a murderer, didn't she? And she knows it.
Kevin Stoner nodded gravely.
Let's just hope he doesn't know it too.
Marie waited impatiently for the morning meeting to finish, so she could take a look at the CCTV footage of Sarah on the bank of the Thames. She opened up the program on her computer and stared at the screen. She watched it through twice, and then, frame by frame, paused it. The second time she looked at one of these shots, she froze it, then printed it off. She was still staring at it when she noticed Robbie Melton looking over her shoulder. She looked up at him.
Rob, look at the CCTV clip, will you? And then slow it down and tell me if you see anything strange on it.
She stood up and let Robbie sit in front of the monitor. A few moments later, he paused the footage on exactly the same frame as Marie.
I'm not sure that she's alone, Sarge. I'm sure there is someone behind her. I'd place a bet on it.
You can't see them, but... He stabbed his finger on the printout.
Well, she looks like she's glancing back at someone. You can tell by her anguished expression.
He bit on his lip and stared harder at the still.
I suppose she could just be looking round in case someone saw her. I should think the last thing you'd want was someone calling it in and the river patrol dragging you out before you'd finished the job. But my money's on the first option.
Exactly. It would never in a month of Sundays get past the CPS as evidence, but I'm damn sure we're right.
Robbie grunted.
This won't help anything, except to indicate that there was foul play.
He stood up so she could sit down again.
Are you convinced that there's something sinister going on here, Sarge? Or are we reading too much into a fearful backward glance and the fact that the victim is our boss's sister-in-law?
Marie shook her head.
No, Robbie, the whole thing cries out that there's a crime going on here. Not a straightforward one, but I think when we find out more, we'll dig up something very nasty.
And if it was coercion or some dark kind of assisted suicide, then we're forced to consider a link with our vagrant.
Marie nodded.
Any luck with identifying him yet?
Charlie and Max are chasing up missing persons, and Rosie is working on a digitally enhanced image of the man showing him clean-shaven and tidy. Someone should recognize him.
Gary and Kevin are talking to one or two faces they know on the streets, and I'm going to ask them to trawl around the local charity shops, the Salvation Army, and anywhere he might have picked up his street clothes. Forensics say they're all second-hand garments, but not overly worn. Why would a man who obviously has money and takes care of his appearance suddenly morph into a tramp? It doesn't make sense.
Gary's just rung me with the news that he was seen with another man, well-dressed and with piercing eyes. Our wannabe vagrant was apparently terrified of him.
Robbie groaned. More puzzles. Give me a straightforward bloody murder any day.
Marie laughed.
Can you wait until Jackman gets back before you wish one of those on us? We're busy enough as it is.
After telling Jackman how the boys got on, Ella made some tea and they sat and talked for a while. She listened to Jackman's questions, but said she couldn't be of any help.
We talked so much, but in retrospect none of it was about her past. She did tell me that there had been an incident when she was younger that was difficult for her to talk about. She said that she'd even had to ask James never to ask her about it. So I let it go. You don't want to hurt people, do you?
But you would have liked to know, wouldn't you?
Asked Jackman.
Too right. I was eaten up with curiosity. Maybe it's my nature, born nosy, but I even googled the name to see if I could discover what it was.
I take it you had no luck.
None at all, and I'm no slouch when it comes to a bit of sleuthing on the internet.
Jackman smiled.
And you were in the right job, working for the police in forensics.
Jackman regretted his words as soon as he said them.
I think I'm probably better suited to this kind of thing, she said.
Sorry, that was thoughtless of me. It's just that you were very good at what you did. Lots of people, including Professor Rory Wilkinson, really miss you.
Thanks, but I obviously don't have the stomach for it.
She steered the conversation back to Sarah.
She did mention a school friend once, although it was just a passing comment. I don't think she realized what she'd said, but I never forgot it, as it was probably the only mention she ever made of her early life.
Do you recall the name?
Pauline? Yeah, that's it. Pauline Grover.
Jackman raised an eyebrow.
You have a good memory.
You need one working with children, she laughed.
Jackman thought she looked very attractive when she laughed. Hastily, he dragged his attention back to the matter in hand. So, did you Google her too?
How did you guess? Yeah, I did. And again, nothing at all.
I guess not everyone likes social media.
Ella nodded. Then she looked at him and said,
Jackman, is there anything practical I can do to help you? I'm going to have a fair bit of spare time while the boys are at school. James has a woman who comes in to clean, so once I've made sure their suppers are ready and their clothes are all clean and pressed, I'm pretty free.
There might be. I'd certainly appreciate it. I just need to fathom out where to start.
Just say. Meanwhile, I'll speak to the children, as I said. Luckily, they are talking about Sarah quite openly, which is good.
And James is slowly becoming more aware that he has to pull his weight, though I have no idea how he would cope if you weren't here.
Well, it was good for me. I was fed up mooching around, but I couldn't muster the energy to look for a new job. I think I was bordering on depression, to be honest. Your mother's call was just what I needed to get me back into gear again.
Jackman pushed his chair back.
Well, as things are on a more even keel here today, I think I'll go into work for a few hours. I'll come back this evening to check on you all. Is that all right with you?
Fine. I need to get a schedule together for Ryan and Miles after school activities and check what shopping we need. Oh, and settle in and unpack. It was all a bit of a rush.
Thanks again, Ella. It's good to have you here. You're a real lifesaver.
Suddenly, his phone rang.
Sorry, I need to take this. It's Marie.
He listened while the tension swept through him.
Can you get over here, sir? We've had a development.
Marie spoke fast.
Robbie picked up an attention drawn from DCI Cameron Walker in Beach Lacey. He's driving over now. I think you need to hear what he has to say.
Jackman was already on his feet.
On my way, Marie.
Chapter 10. DCI Cameron Walker and Jackman arrived at the same time. Jackman knew Cameron's reputation. He was a likable detective and a fount of local knowledge. He was tall and solidly built, but a terrier when he got his teeth into a case. Not a man to be underestimated.
Jackman, nice to see you.
Cameron held out his hand.
Sorry to hear about what happened.
Jackman gripped the outstretched hand.
Not exactly the best time of my life,